It's September 16th, 2016. Happy Mexican Independence Day. Happy Trail of Tears Commemoration Day. And happy Collect Rocks Day. And I guess it's Happy Hillary Health Conspiracy Day. Once again, this is Kevin Mahoney. I am the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Each week, we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, on the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. Today, we're looking at the Trump defiles once again. You know, we can't help it, folks, in the presidential election year. So today, this week, we get an explosion of conspiracy theories about Clinton's health. Oh, and of course, we have to talk about the revolt of the deplorables. And what's up with national Democrats seeking a love fest with Republicans? We're going to get into that today. Really? In estate news, we'll be checking out the update on a PA debit card payroll legislation, SB 1265. Sean's going to give us a little bit update on that after he actually got to go in, listen to some hearings on that. And we got some two so-called Blue Lives Matters bills that are making their way through the PA House. And the vote is in from ABSCUF, the faculty union representing the faculty from the 14 state-owned universities in Pennsylvania. And 93% of faculty vote to authorize a strike. Negotiations continue today. Will we see a strike date set? We'll check that out. All that and so much more today on Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Now remember, you can keep progressive activist media going strong by becoming a member for as little as $2 a month, folks. Our 2016 membership drive is all about preparing for the next 5 years of pull no punches, progressive media, and PA. Simply go to ragingchickenpress.org and click Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you're listening to Podbean, just click on Become a Patron right at the top. It's that green button and you'll be on your way. Be sure to check out all our thank you gifts for each membership level while you're there. And just a reminder, we are looking, bringing on some new writers, social media organizers, and tech folks to help build our framework here at Raging Chicken. If you are interested in helping out or pursuing an internship or writing or contributing to Raging Chicken Press or Raging Chicken Radio, drop me a line at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. So, man, Sean, this has been quite a week, I have to say. And it seems like we're saying that every single week right now. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Just pretty good. So what is going on this week in the world of the Trumpster?
Well, Donald Trump wanted to start World War III over an active gesture by Iran. Unfortunately, that got no media attention as Hillary Clinton decided to faint a little bit at a 9/11 memorial. And decided to call Trump voters basket of deplorables, which I agree with. I think they are a basket of deplorables. When you have people who are punching 69-year-old grandmas in the face, who are also carrying air tanks, and who are people like David Duke and other white nationalists, those are the people you make your bed with, and either you are with them or you're against them.
Hey, I look, I'm with you, man. I said, and I said to you before we got on today is that, for me, it's like there's two ways of looking at this, right? Number one, there's the way exactly what you said is like, look, there's the stuff that is coming out of that campaign, the racism that's coming out of that campaign, that anti-worker stuff that's coming out of that campaign, the sheer nonsense and the hateful stuff that's coming out of that campaign. If you're standing with the Trump at this point, man, I don't know what else to say. You earned the label of deplorable. So there's like that as a kind of a factual matter. There's no way around it. It's if you're in that camp, you're in that camp, right? On the other hand, here's another example of Democrats leaving themselves open. When Hillary says like half the campaign or half the Trump supporters are deplorables, it just opens up the political fire that's going to come from that side of things. I'm not one of those people. Just reminds me back to the comment that Obama made about in Pennsylvania about people clinging to the gods and guns in Pennsylvania. And again, we could talk about, how factually true that is or not. But when it gets out in the political sphere, it just seems to like play right into Trump's hands.
Yeah, no, it's true. What else can you say about it?
No, I know. But it's interesting to me because basically, I live in a small town in Pennsylvania. And I have to say is that there are, my last count, I think 6 or 7 different houses, right, on my drive to work with Trump signs. right? And I have yet to see any Hillary sign whatsoever, right? And why I say that is, like, on the one hand, yeah, so, you know, there's energy in the Trump campaign, but what's always concerning to me is, like, what that energy is about. And I think it's exactly what she was pointing to, right? It's about the hate-driven rhetoric and the hatefulness and the racism that's coming out of that campaign. And I think that's emboldening some people, and it always makes me concerned about what's going to happen.
No, it does. It makes you worry. I'm living out here in central Pennsylvania. I'm living in Midtown Harrisburg, which is a little fairly liberal island of progressives, but it's stuck in the middle of central Pennsylvania, you know, which is fairly conservative, which is really conservative. And, you know, you know, there are a bunch of Republicans out here who are going to vote for Hillary Clinton because they are disgusted in what Donald Trump is doing. There's also a lot of Democrats out here. But, you know, a lot of the Trump supporters I know, I'm a little on the fence with. I mean, they're nice people personally, but their political views are batshit crazy.
Right.
You know, and they support a lot of the stuff that Donald Trump says. And, you know, when a Trump rally is in the area, you know, you have all these people coming in and you just look at them and you shake your head. You're like, wow, like, where did these people come from? You know, like when you see these people around in the area, you know, just recently Harrisburg is a pretty divided area economically. There's the east shore of the side of the river, which is where Harrisburg's at, Steelton, which is an old steel town on the Susquehanna River, Paxtang, and like other poor areas, middle class or lower middle class areas. And then you go on the west shore where Camp Hill and Mechanicsburg is at. And these are where, you know, where the money lies. And over there, there's Trinity High School, which is a Catholic high school that was specifically built for the west shore residents, so they didn't have to send their kids to the Catholic, you know, Bishop McDevitt, which is in Harrisburg on the other side of the river, which is where a lot of black people are at. And, you know, when Trump was at Cumberland Valley High School, a bunch of Trinity High School students got involved in a fist fight with a Trump protester on the floor, and it was videotaped. And it is something that, like, these are 17, 16-year-old kids doing this. It's imagine what you see what the parents and the grown-ups are doing with this, too. It's sickening, and it's disheartening to see how wide the age group is with Trump supporters, and how far they're actually willing to go with violence to go after Clinton supporters or Trump protesters.
No, that's right. And I think, you know, I have to say that, you know, I think if there's any good thing about seeing these Trump signs going up around and seeing these supporters come out, is at least they're outing themselves. At the very least, I know where some of these folks live now. And so, like, I'm kind of aware of, you know, where to steer my kids away from and that kind of stuff, and where to warn people about if we kind of see that kind of eruption. So that's the one thing. So let me ask you about the other side of that. But given what we're seeing right now, in the presidential campaign and Donald Trump's rhetoric and so many Republicans, right, on the national stage, but even the statewide stage, are refusing to just denounce this guy, right? So the Democrats, right, including the Hillary Clinton campaign, instead of just going in for the, like, all right, let's take these people out. Let's get rid of this party that has been fostering these flames for the longest time. It's like they're seeking, like, long lost friends in the Republican Party,
and you can come over and
bipartisan love fest or something like that. What is up with that?
Yeah. So last week, you know, this is something that I think Sam Cedar and others have been talking about for months now, how Clinton is tacitly supporting or courting Republicans. I mean, yeah, she knows she's not going to have a Democratic Congress when she gets in there, at least a Democratic House. Now she might not even have a Democratic Senate with the lack of campaign, but she is courting her campaign in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania is now courting Republicans.
Yep.
And her campaign, Hillary for PA, set up a Tumblr page called Pennsylvania GOP Yearbook, and is basically promoting all of about 20 Republicans and different groups, college groups, and you know, regional Republican groups that are denouncing Trump. And you look at some of these people, you have someone who worked for the World Bank as a trade representative. You have people who worked for George Bush and Ronald Reagan. You have people who work for, you know, I'm just going through this list. The former CIA and NSA director, Michael Hayden, is from Pittsburgh, you know, courting him, courting people who work for the National Security Council, courting people who work for Homeland Security, courting people who are the neocons who brought us some of the worst years of this country's history between 2000 and 2008. I'm not talking about economically. I'm talking about the disasters in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, these are the people that brought us these disasters, and these are the people she's courting on Tumblr, on Facebook, and on social media saying, hey, these people are against Donald Trump. You know, we should broaden our tent and bring in the moderate Republicans when they're just a bunch of neocons and war hawks who started, who, you know, brought us some of the biggest blunders, foreign policy blunders in this country's history.
Yeah, I think she's assisting the these Republicans, what do you want to call them, moderate Republicans, instead of forcing them to reckon with the choices that their party has been actively pursuing over the past, you know, three decades, right? And that's just been getting worse and worse every single year. Instead of having them forced to reckon with that and kind of deal with that directly, he's given them cover, what I see it at. You know, and I'm looking one of the groups on that list that you're talking about on the PA GOP yearbook is the Penn State College Republicans, right? And what it says underneath there, it says, you know, a quote, our membership was given the chance to vote on whether they should support Donald Trump. We found the vast majority of the membership, roughly 72%, was against having us support him, right? So it makes it all, you know, allows them, and by the Hillary campaign being able to promote this, allows them to basically say, you know, look, we're against Trump, but the Republican Party has nothing to deal with that, even though the Republican Party is like responsible for Trump at this point.
Yes, and I think it's one thing, okay, you have young college Republicans, you know, you promote them because they're a younger generation, more millennial generation. They're going to be more liberal in their views, probably different than the views of the Republicans that are now in control of the party. But you go to the first two people you see on this Tumblr site, it's Tom Ridge and Michael Chertoff.
Sure. Like,
are you kidding me? Some of the biggest war hawks, neocons around. You know, you scroll down, Michael Hayden. You know, it's just, you know, Ron Castile, Philadelphia Supreme Court Justice from Philadelphia. I know people who have known him personally throughout his career. Supposedly really nice person. He's a Republican from the Philadelphia area. So he's pretty much a moderate Democrat at that point. But I mean, you know, some of these people up there raise some questions. Michael Hayden, Chertoff, Ridge, all these other rail bank trade representative. Like, these are the people that you're promoting out there. And that's very worrisome.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think, you know, for me, if there's Republicans, moderate Republicans, and they can't stand what's been happening with the Trump and they can't stand what's been happening with their party, then let them do the work, right? Why on earth that you'd spend the time in a campaign and basically turning a back? And I tell you, I hear this from more and more progressives, more and more of the folks on the left, more and more movement people, that they're getting increasingly frustrated by feeling like, yep, the National Democrats did exactly what they thought they were going to do. They're going to sit there and turn their back on us, pivot towards the center, which is now in the right wing at this point, right? And they're going to forget us and just ignore us and expect us to show up for them on the election day. And I'll tell you, as you keep on seeing this in the national polls, with all the caveats about the limitations of national polls, now that lead that Clinton had in the national polls is all but evaporated. Right. And in some polls are actually showing now that you got Trump out in front. Right. And I think it's reflection of that, because there's people that are just freaking dropping out. And they're like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with the Democratic Party. I'm done with being kind of taken for granted as part of this. We're going to concentrate on our movements and have at it. Now, I don't think that's a great scenario. Right. But I think that does reflect the kind of frustration we're seeing by people who've been working their tails off for the past 10 years to build these movements.
Right. And another thing is, it's like, you got the Republican Party that is dying right in front of us. Why are you doing anything to assist them? Why aren't you going after Pat Toomey, who has tacitly supported Donald Trump, who's been dancing around that question? You know, he hasn't answered, given a straight question. He's given nothing but non-answer answers the whole entire time. Just put your foot right on his jugular and go after him. Go for the kill shot. You know, take him out. You know, you have Katie McGinty, who's not going to be a great Senate campaign candidate, but take him out. And end his political career right there. Like, what's so hard about that? What? And this is the reason now Democrats had a chance at winning the Senate. Now it's pretty much a 50-50 toss-up. They might even lose the Senate. And what's going to happen if you lose the Senate? Are you going to get the Supreme Court nominees you need? You know,
no.
To protect Roe.
The answer
Roe
is
v.
no.
Yeah, to protect Roe v. Wade, to protect workers' rights, to protect you know, the rights of so many people, women's rights, all these other things. Are you going to get those Supreme Court nominees? No. And who's to say the Republicans aren't just going to allow having 8 Supreme Court justices on the bench for another 4 years?
No, exactly. And I'll tell you, it's a, here's my gift to the Democrats out there. If you care at all about actually like producing a party that's going to be capable of ruling the kind of nation that we are evolving into, right? Which means, you know, one that's more diverse, that's younger, that's more to the left of where the Democratic Party is, certainly. If you start looking at that, so here's my gift to them. This is how you run a campaign against the Republicans right now. You say, Donald Trump in one column, and on that column you list what Donald Trump stands for, and then you go to the Republicans, you choose your individual Republicans running for Senate right now, and you show what they stand for, and then you put a big question mark right in the center, you show me the difference, and then you do that with a Republican national platform. Here's what Trump stands for, here's what the national platform stands for. Big question mark, show me the difference. Vote Democrat. This is not hard, people. Let's do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's exactly what you were going to like. This is what Pat Toomey stands for. Pat Toomey thinks that abortion should be illegal. This is what Donald Trump stands for. Donald Trump thinks abortion should be illegal. Like, why are you not going after Pat Toomey on these issues?
It baffles me. It baffles me. I've done it. It goes right to the heart of what we saw, what Thomas Frank was kind of wrote about, Listen Liberal, about this whole notion that, you know, we're after this kind of post-partisan politics. We're all going to get along, right? Completely ignorant and or unwilling to deal with the real power differential and class divide and inequalities that we have to deal in this country, right? This Democratic Party, if this is the way this Democratic Party continues to go, this Democratic Party is going to be incapable of addressing those issues that are facing so many people across this country right now. So I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and if Hillary Clinton wins the election by default, which I think she will, but she does not win the Senate, that should be the biggest failure of her campaign.
It might be the biggest failure of her campaign, but I'll tell you, she's not going to get a honeymoon from the left. I'll tell you that.
No. And it's only going to allow your voices like Elizabeth Warren. It's going to empower them even more to speak up in the Senate.
Well, maybe, and we'll see. We'll see if they're going to toe the line coming up. We know Sanders is not going to toe the line, right? Sanders is going to be right out there continuing what he started. And hopefully that organization that he promised us is not going to just going to be a way of kind of funneling money to these like kind of right-wing Democrats and corporate Democrats. Hopefully it's all going to be kind of funneled back into the movements, which actually where power originates from. Well, listen, so we're coming right up on our break, and I don't want to cut this off too short, but when we come back, we're going to shift our focus from the national stage to the state stage. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on here in Pennsylvania, and we're going to get into that a little bit after this break. This is Kevin Mahoney. I'm the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This is Out the Coop podcast on Raging Chicken Radio. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 2004. That was not a good day for hockey fans. The National Hockey League owners locked out the players. The owners and the players' union could not come to an agreement on issues including pay, free agency rules, and drug testing. League owners also wanted to implement a salary cap. The Players Association objected. The first game of the season was supposed to take place on October 13th. But across the country, the arenas stood silent. As the impasse dragged on, in February, the league announced the season was canceled. The Associated Press reported, quote, "A hockey season on the brink is now a season gone bust." The NHL canceled what was left of its decimated schedule Wednesday after a round of last gasp negotiations failed to resolve differences over a salary cap, the flashpoint issue that led to a lockout. The article continued, quote, "No Stanley Cup champion will be crowned. The first time that's happened since 1919, when the two-year-old league called off the finals because of a flu epidemic. It was the first time that a North American professional sports league lost a full season to a labor dispute. Some of the players found work in the European leagues at greatly reduced pay. It's estimated that the league lost $2 billion in the lockout and that players lost $1 billion in salaries. The impact of the lockout rippled throughout restaurants and other businesses that relied on the hockey crowds, causing layoffs for waitstaff. Finally, in July, an agreement was reached. The players gave in to the owner's demand for a salary cap. In 2012, another lockout by management cost NHL players another half of the season. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to Ragey Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Each week we get into the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's Harrisburg, PA, and, you know, the USA too as well. Why, you know, we don't discriminate here. We're back here again with Sean Kitchen, and I had to go get myself a drink of water, go cool off a little bit after getting so pissed off about talking about the Democrats, Republicans, and nationwide. But let's turn our focus a little bit, Sean, to what's going on here in Pennsylvania. So you've been kind of tracking some legislation that's been coming out of the House and the Senate right now, right?
Yeah, so on the Pennsylvania House was back in session this week. They didn't have any voting sessions, but they were back holding information hearings, conducting hearings. Next week, they're going to be back for doing floor work. And I had a day off this week on one of my only days off. I was able to go to a hearing on the payroll debit card legislation to get more of an it was an informative hearing. There were representatives from Visa, MasterCard, PNC, and the Pennsylvania Bankers Association there, and also two people testifying kind of like against the bill or advocating for a better bill from the AFL-CIO and the Philadelphia Community Legal Services, which they focus on wage theft issues within the city of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. So what seems to be the trajectory of this thing? You think this is going to come through or...
Yes, I believe from watching the bill and getting a better understanding of it, I believe that it is going to pass. Mm-hmm. I believe it's going to come out of the Labor and Industry Committee, and I have a feeling that it will become law in Pennsylvania. One of the things that the banks were arguing, just from watching it, is that they're trying to put the check cashing business out of the industry out of business, pretty much, in Pennsylvania. It seems like that's who they're going after. The whole entire time while they were speaking, they were talking about the service fees that check cashing industry places charge customers per check, like 3% to like 5% per paycheck is getting taken out and going into the check cashing business. But also their argument was pretty much, hey, this stuff is legal throughout the country. It's legal in Pennsylvania. It's happening here. We're trying to set up some guidelines and the legislature is going along with them.
All right, which is a fair point, except, you know, I also think that it's a little bit disingenuous for the banks to say that this is all about altruism or something
like that. I don't believe
this is going to be a big money grab for them. If they're able to put the check cashing business out of check cashing industry out of business, it just basically means more revenue flowing into their coffers, right?
Exactly. They're not doing this for the good of the people. They're doing this trying to put an industry out of business. Basically, their point is there's companies in Pennsylvania already using these cards, which I have mm-hmm. seen them. And they're unregulated and they're supporting bills with putting forth a set of regulations. It doesn't know how far they'll go with the regulations, but it is something that they're supporting. And it's something that the Community Legal Service from Philadelphia said they'll support if they go make it like a really hard, stringent bill that the Connecticut has. Pretty much Visa and MasterCard said they make their money. There was no mentions of consumer fees, which was a little bit of a sticking point. Mm-hmm. Really, I think like all in all, like nine legislators out of like a 20 body committee showed up to the hearing to ask questions. So one of the questions asked, is this redundant since it's already legal throughout the country? And the response was no, this is not redundant because it's not in Pennsylvania statute, but it's being used in Pennsylvania. So pretty much people are using it. It's going to be growing. And you might as well make it legal and have a set of guidelines going forward.
Well, you know, I can hear that in a pragmatic way. But, you know, it's the sad part for me about this is that it just underscores the lack of political imagination and political will in our state and our country right now, frankly. Because, like, you know, on the one hand, I don't know who's going to be out there that's going to seriously make a strong case that the check cashing industry is a good thing. I mean, you know, they basically rake people over the coal. They put people underwater and with exorbitant fees and all that other kind of stuff. But we could imagine another scenario. We say, okay, why don't we do this check card thing? Excuse me. Why don't we do this check card thing? But you know what? There's going to be no fees associated with it. It's going to be something that a company could use in lieu of actual cash paychecks. But any fees that are associated with issuing the debit card is going to be on the corporation, right? Either on the bank side or on the corporate side. You know, I mean, that would be the way that you're actually really going to help out workers by, you know, removing the debt burden that these cards will like inevitably lead to in one way or another.
Exactly. I'm not like it's from my observations from watching it. it seemed like the legislators, especially the Republicans on the committee and the person chairing the committee now, Maureen Gingrich, mm-hmm. who is this her second meeting, she was very friendly and cozy with these banks, mm-hmm. which was pretty alarming to see how up close, how cozy they were with the lobbyists and making it happy-go-lucky and, you know, patting them on the back essentially for bringing this bill up. You know, there were a couple questions about how the banks make their money. They said most of the money is made off of interchange fees between people using the cards. Mm-hmm. So not like fees from the consumers, but just like the cards being used and being handed out. The banks are making revenue off of that. The banks are making revenue off of fees imposed on the employers. And they claim that very rarely do they make money off of fees imposed on the consumers.
Yeah, it's a lie.
But right. One of the things, one of the main arguments coming out of this, I thought was pretty funny from Visa and MasterCard, is that this is a good way to reduce carbon footprint by saving. They call this an environmental friendly bill because it reduces people from delivering the checks in the mail and also from people driving to go to the check cashing, and it saves trees because you're not chopping down the trees for the paper.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Last time I checked, by the way, those little cards are made out of plastic, which is made out of petroleum, right? You have to put them in a machine that draws on energy. That a lot of that in Pennsylvania still comes from dirty energy, right? So show me the lack of the carbon footprint that you're saving out, really, folks. Come on. I'm just out of curiosity. Did anybody ask the question about how much the banks are projecting of earning of the switch?
No.
Yeah, and there's Democrats on this committee, right?
Yes.
That's something that they want to know.
Well, they didn't ask that question. One brought up concerns about fees. Basically, Netspend put out a report. Someone said, you know, they spend $400 a year going to a check cashing place.
Yeah.
If you get help with some of these fees, you'll actually be spending more money a year on check cashing. So you'll be making sub-minimum wage.
Right.
That question was brought up and the bank's concerned about it. I was like, oh, okay. But really, like stuff about getting rush cards and what happens if you lose your car on the Friday, can you get it back on a Saturday and that type of stuff.
Yeah. And like, you know, again, I mean, like I said, like a lot of this is fair questions. And I could think that, you know, there could be ways of doing this to be an interesting way. Just what bothers me, you know, as usual, is that it's like if you start asking the hard questions that somehow that you're you know, against making it easier for people. No, it's not like that. But everybody should understand exactly what's at stake here, that, you know, you don't have kind of like really, you know, the good angel bankers that are out there trying to help us all.
I mean, these cards are going to be have quadrupled over the past 4 years, and they're set to increase exponentially over the next few years. So, you know, this is a play by the banks trying to get these cards out there. So Visa, MasterCard, and your local banks, PNC, Wells Fargo, and others are making billions of dollars in profits off of this.
Right. And let's remember when debit cards first got introduced and ATM cards first got introduced, right? The whole scheme behind the ATM cards and the debit cards initially were like, hey, this is a way to get your money out, right? And there were absolutely zero fees that were associated with those cards initially, right? It was only after it became common practice that the banks started to ramp up their fees and seeing it as a new profit center. So, you know, again, the fact that historically that has worked out so well for them, I seriously doubt that they don't have a business plan that is about making this a way of increasing their revenue over the long haul. So we'll see. But so you've got that, and now we've also got these other pieces of legislation.
These are more concerning pieces of legislation.
The so-called Blue Lives Matter bills that are making their way through the House.
Exactly. So back in July, two bills were introduced, one by a Democrat from Western Pennsylvania named Frank Burns, and another by a Republican, Representative Zimmerman. I don't know where he's from. But basically,
His name is actually Zimmerman.
Yes, his name is Zimmerman. David H. Zimmerman.
Oh, great. Any relative to a guy down in Florida that had a little issue with his racism, just out of curiosity?
I'm not sure.
Just wondering.
But
fair question.
So both of these bills would make it hate would add police officers. Well, one bill would exclusively add police officers to the hate crimes legislation. Basically, any crimes committed against a police officer might be brought up for a hate crime statute. I guess it's up to the intent of the prosecutor. So if you get arrested by a police officer and there's a physical altercation that happens because you're resisting arrest, it would be interesting to see what happens if that becomes a hate crime. That's just some of the things that you could think about, you know, problems coming from these bills. So Representative Burns's bill is called the Blue Lives Matter bill. And this was introduced days after the Dallas shootings, with the Black Lives Matter protest, and we found it was just the lone wolf actor who did this, who was mentally off his rocker, and to commit these atrocities. Then there is Representative Zimmerman's bill, which changes Pennsylvania's ethnic intimidation statute. So basically, that protects people under their race, religion, or the race, religion, and not gender, and color or national origin.
This just seems to mean. I mean, I don't know. Look,
so you think
I get the fact that there's police officers who feel like they're being unfairly, you know, discussed in the media, whatever they want to say. I get that there's some people that feel that way, right? But this just seems like a spiteful bit of a move, just a spite. Organizations like Black Lives Matter, who have been drawing attention to,
frankly, you know, I think it's racist, this legislation.
Yeah. You're. I think you're more on than I am on this one.
I mean, frankly, I think it's I think these are racist legislation. This is not this is to promote the Fraternal Order of Police, and the State Police Association, State Troopers Association, the two police unions that are pushing this bill. You know, and we can have our debates whether police officers should be unionized or not, but these two bills are coming from the FOP and the Pennsylvania State Police Association and the unions that represent these officers. And this is coming from legislators who live in primarily white districts and who will never step into a city other than Harrisburg in their whole entire lives.
Yep. And they go ahead. Sorry.
No. And they don't know what it's like living in a city with poverty, drugs, and crime on a daily basis.
No. And I'll say this to any union for that matter. It's like, if you know, in terms of that question that you raised about should there be unions, I said 100%, yes, police officers should be unionized. However, when you start, if you're in a union leadership, and I don't care if you're talking about the FOP or you're any union leader, when you start protecting, right, people that are doing things that are illegal, that are doing racist, right, that are about harassment, right, that are about violence, right, then not only are you doing something wrong, right, by our society, but you are actually hurting the cause of unionism, right, by actually protecting those kind of bad actors. Now, again, look, best thing about unions is that, you know, when it comes to a bad scenario, is that you got due process. You got due process protection. But when you go over the board and you actually, you know, are protecting people that are systematically assaulting and killing people, then, you know, again, you hurt all of us in the union movement.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see where the priorities at of this legislator right before the election. Looks like they're trying to – these bills aren't slated for – a vote yet in committee, but there are rumblings from those within the Capitol and within the Harrisburg Beltway that these votes might be coming pretty soon, and that this might be a tactic to use this against legislators who vote against this in the election. So basically, this is going to force Democrats into voting for bad bills and possibly make it to the governor's desk.
I'm not going to let them off that way. We are not. I will not use that language that we're going to force Democrats. Democrats are going to have to choose. Right, they're either going to have to play the kind of like the light-footed political game that they've been playing for a long time, or they're going to have to come out and take a strong stance against these bills and articulate why that's an issue. Right, and I get the real concern about them worried about their districts, but you know what? For too long, we've let Democrats off the hook by saying, "Well, they're going to be forced to do this." No, they're not being forced to do this.
Well, knowing the Pennsylvania Democratic House caucus, they will probably go along and vote for this bill regardless.
No, I agree with you, right? But let's not let them off the hook for that, because they are not victims in this, right? They are ones who have failed, right, to articulate, right, a counter vision to this in any strong way. And which is one of the reasons why that we're in this situation in this state. We could talk about gerrymandering, a whole bunch of other stuff too as well, but that's one of these kind of stuff. The refusal to build the movement from the ground floor up.
And one of the things that's really funny, is really amazing and sad to see, is that this bill is going to get quicker attention. It's going to move through the House quicker than Representative Sims or Sanicerio's regarding LGBTQ protections in this state after a spate of gay bashing that happened within the past couple of years.
Right. No, it's good. That's a good point. Good point. Crazy. Well, we got one more thing in Pennsylvania here too, as well. As you know, that I am personally a member of APSCUF, which is where I also get charged up on union issues, and where APSCUF is the faculty union that represents the 14 state-owned faculty of the state 14 state-owned universities in Pennsylvania. And last week, when we left you off last week, it was the last day of the strike vote, a strike authorization vote, I should say. And we got the numbers back earlier this week, and 93% of the faculty who voted 93% of the faculty who voted in favor of authorizing a strike. So today we've got a negotiation session out there in Harrisburg. Our state president, Ken Mash, has come out and basically said, is like, look, we're not going to set any kind of strike date until we give this one more shot at the table. Well, today is the shot. So we could be seeing a strike date set anytime soon in the near future, Sean.
Nice. It was amazing to see the speed at which these votes were counted. It looks like the votes were counted by Monday morning.
That's right.
By the quickest. It seemed like the people at AppStuff had a lot of work to do over the weekend.
Yeah, it actually did. I have to say, we got some amazing staff out there in Harrisburg that have been, they're working around the clock, just like all of us on the campuses, on the one hand, to try to prevent this from ever happening, but two, at the same time, simultaneously doing all the organizing that's necessary on the ground to prepare for the event of a strike. So we've got the end of next week, a week from today, actually, yesterday is when AppScuff's Legislative Assembly is out there in Harrisburg. And as part of that assembly, there's also going to be the strike workshop where we're going to have strike leaders and organizers from across the state and AppScuff are going to be getting together and doing the final preparations moving forward. So that's kind of one of the things that's on the agenda. And like, again, I can't stress it enough. I hope this doesn't have to ever has to come to this, but as I've made it clear over and over again on our campus and to, people in my community, is that I will refuse to watch the slow, continual slide in the quality and the commitment to public higher education in this state. And if we have to stand up for strike, that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. So has there been more outreach with students going on lately?
Absolutely, quite a bit actually here on campus. We know it's also happening across the state. Here at Kutztown, we've had yesterday there was a second one. We have another student meeting that's coming up on Monday. What's been really interesting, I have to say, and I may have mentioned this before, is that at our first kind of student information meeting of the semester, we had a whole bunch of student leaders come out. We had about 30 students that came out to that meeting, and what was interesting is a lot of those students were also coming out of the who had been organizers or volunteers with the Bernie Sanders campaign. So they came in, and this was historically new for me at Kutztown, but they came into that meeting already with a particular language about activism, a language of organizing, and kind of understood the kind of things like austerity, right, and budget cuts and the cuts in education. And I've also, we've had students around the state who have been experiencing their programs getting cut, that their tuition that's going up. So students, I think, have been pretty amazing in this and have been standing behind us for the most part. I have yet to hear, and I'm not saying that it's not out there, but I have yet to hear the strong voices of student voices coming out, say, like against it. If anything, there's just, students have a lot of questions. We'll see this week coming up on Tuesday, the 20th, September 20th here at Kutztown, we're going to be hosting the PA-AFL-CIO's Burgers and Ballots Outreach, which they every election year, the PA-AFL-CIO packs up their RV with grills and burgers and all that kind of stuff. And they go around the campuses and community events to get people registered to vote. And so AppScuff is cooperating with them, and we're kind of that's going to be a great, another student event and just another opportunity to talk to students about what we can do. So, that's been a good thing so far. And I think we're all on the same page that we want to kind of put the pressure on so that this doesn't have to, we don't have to get to the point where we have to strike.
Yeah, hopefully you guys don't.
Hope we don't. And if we do, I hope that everybody is out there on the line, and it's a 100% commitment that we're going to make it clear to our students, to the community, to parents, and everyone else that we are not going to go quietly into the night. All right, so we are coming up to yet another break. When we come back, yeah, we're going to wrap it up here with, once again, our little checking in with Sean on some craft beer stuff, a couple other fun things for the break. An old TV friend has made a reappearance on the internet, and we're going to have talk a little bit about that, and we'll sign off for the week. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This is Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Sean Kitchen. Sean, so there's been a very popular media figure, at least for those of us here on the left, who's made a little reappearance on the interwebs. Tell us a little about it.
Yeah, Keith Olbermann is now doing internet videos for GQ magazine, which is pretty awesome because I've been missing my I've been missing Keith Olbermann on TV for quite some time now.
Yeah, you're not alone, man.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching Keith Olbermann when I was maybe 10, 12 years ago when he was on MSNBC, at least since 2004, since the Iraq War. Going into high school, I was very conscious of what was happening around me, going to school in Center City, Philadelphia. I remember during the elections when John Kerry was running, there were a bunch of anti-war protests going on, and John Kerry was speaking just blocks away from my high school while he was campaigning that fall. And, you know, since then I was watching Keith Olbermann on TV. So that's my sophomore, freshman year of high school. And it's great. You know, he's probably one of my idols growing up because he just laid it on the line and was unabashed with what he was thinking. And it's great to see him back on TV, back on the internet now.
Yeah. And I have to say is like, you see when they, the launch out of it in GQ, the title of the article launching it is Keith Olbermann is back and he thinks Donald Trump is a demonic messiah. Right. And one of his first episodes that he launched out there is 176 shocking things that Donald Trump has done this election.
And you know what? I watched it all.
Yeah. Get ready to count along with Olbermann once again. I'm really happy to see him back back online, and I think it's going to be an asset to all of us this election. So, Sean, I understand also you got some new beer news out there in Harrisburg.
Yes. So Pizza Boy has released their front side lip slide 10% double IPA. Yesterday it was it's pretty damn good. It drinks like a 5% beer. So watch out, you know, one or two are good for the day and that's it. Don't advise drinking more unless you need a ride home from where you're at. And then also we have this nice Trung latte. It's a 5% coffee milk stout that's on right now.
Oh my God, it sounds great.
Typically you don't get stouts at 5%. Usually they're 7, 8, 9%. You have one or two of them, you're done for the day. But this beer is actually going to have a few of them without worrying about getting drunk or anything like that. And actually enjoying a good beer, you know, a sessionable beer. So what they did was they had a tank full of it. They put cinnamon and coconut in it and they released it yesterday. They had 200 crowlers put aside, which was half the serving tank. And then they left, once those 200 crowlers were gone, which they probably are by now. Sorry to tell you that. They have the draft for in-house only. And that's it's pretty damn tasty. It's almost like drinking a dessert beer at 5%.
Oh my God.
Imagine a cinnamon coffee flavored almond bar.
I'm already doing that. Thank you very much. Yes. Well, I'll tell you, and I know this is just wishful thinking on my part, but I'm telling you, I'll be out there in Harrisburg next week for ABSCUF's Legislative Assembly and a strike workshop. And I will, on my way out, I am doing definitely the swing by Pizza Boy to pick up the latest of whatever they got. But that delicious sounding beer is going to be gone by then, I'm sure.
It might still be around. Don't worry about it. We also put a couple of new IPAs on, or at least one new IPA on this week, two of them. One's called Euro Trash. It's a 8.5% Belgian IPA. It's pretty tasty. It has a little bit of a Belgian funk to it. And then another one is the Cantaloupe IPA that they put out. And if you like eating cantaloupes, it might be a little late for cantaloupe season, but I'll tell you one thing. That beer is nice and tasty. It has a nice, like, riny cantaloupe taste to it, and then a sweetness from the IPA as well.
Oh, that's cool. It's interesting to hear you say that. I'm just racking my brain right now. I just had this beer a couple weeks back that had it was a cantaloupe something in it, and it was fantastic. I was like, whoa, I never would have paired that together, but so that's definitely worth the trip, I guess. Yeah.
Yep. And just to let you know, there'll be a fresh batch of Marin River on too.
So. Nice. All right. Well, at least we'll get that. Well, I'll tell you what. I've got nothing this week, but I'll tell you what. I've been so freaking tired every single night of this week with all the kind of union organizing, the schoolwork that's going on. My kid got sick. I've had one beer the past 2 weeks. All right, so I've got nothing to share, folks. So listen. So next week we're gonna have to figure out once again. And I'm sorry. I want to apologize to everyone out there. You know, counts on Out the Coop podcast and Raging Chicken Ticket Radio and been following us ever since the beginning. I know the last few weeks have been a little chaotic, and part of that is just, I think I mentioned this right off the top, my teaching schedule got really messed up as one of my classes got canceled, which then forced me to kind of have a class that's at a time that was not very convenient for the plans that Sean and I had for the podcast. And Sean's work schedule has been moving around and both of us have been really busy. Hopefully we're going to get this to level out pretty soon. So next week, Sean and I are going to have to talk about when we're going to be able to release this, since I'm going to be on the road after my class to get out to Harrisburg, but we'll be in touch. So anyway, Sean, I will see you out in Harrisburg next week, man.
All right. I'll see you then. Looking forward to it.
Right, and I hope all of you have an awesome week. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back next week with more Out the Coop. Until then, see ya!